Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. My very special guests today, who are going to be revealing some very, shall we say, trippy information, if you will, and a in-depth analysis on the production of LSD and the connections between the CIA and other propagandistic platforms, including the counterculture, and how all of these wonderful mega bands and counterculture scenarios were in fact a created and contrived way to change society and to mold our morals into a vision far more befitting the elite who dominate society and wish it to be different. And in my opinion, a lot worse. Jan Irvin, Joe Atwell, welcome to the program, gentlemen.
Good to be
here. Thank you for having us on.
So where would you like to kick off? Because the history of the introduction of LSD into culture, I think, is probably a good place to start, and how it actually came about, who invented it, and so on and so forth. Who would like to take that?
Jan should take that.
Who invented LSD? Is that what you asked?
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's a really good place to kick it off, actually, because the typical story is that Albert Hofmann invented LSD originally in 1938, and then he discovered its properties in 1943. But in this July coming up, a researcher that I know out of England, Alan Piper, he's just about to release a new article in the journal Time and Mind that exposes that in a novel by Leo Perutz, published in 1933, which is 5 years before Hofmann supposedly invented it and 10 years before he tested it. In this novel, they're discussing using a drug that's not found in nature, such as LSA would be from ergot, but they're going to extract this drug from this ergot from wheat, and they're going to create a hallucinogen that's going to then cause a return of religious belief and a return in a Roman emperor to his throne, but it inadvertently ends instead in a communist rebellion. And so, but this is all detailed out, you know, 10 years before Hofmann's supposed discovery. And even in this book, they're doing secret tests on unwitting civilians.
Yeah, I would just add that once Gordon Wasson's story about his discovery of the psilocybin mushroom and its effect in Mexico, once that falls apart, and it has fallen apart, believe me, then the whole story of LSD as the public has been given it has to be questioned. And Perutz's book is, in my opinion, simply expressing an awareness of a drug that has already been well understood by the oligarchs, and they have a particular intention for it. And I think that as we go forward through the evidence that is presented in the paper that was released 2 days ago on Gnostic Media website, as we go through the evidence, people will be able to see very clearly that what we're looking at is, without question, an attempt to use the drug as part of a general cultural debasement. In other words, that the oligarchs had the idea that they would create a second neo-feudalism. And so to do that, they started to look for ways to mentally debase, to put into a state where they can't really think clearly, this, you know, the group of people that they want to control.
How exactly can a hallucinogen like LSD be used to control people? Apparently, it has been used in mind control programs such as MKUltra, hasn't it?
Sure. Well, you know, it can actually be used in a number of different ways, such as using it for, you know, they were attempting it as a truth serum and to cause personality splitting or multiple personality syndrome, such as I've recently discussed with Dr. Colin Ross, who's an expert on MKUltra. But another thing that they use it for is to essentially, and it's a multi-pronged attack in this sense, it's to debase the thinking abilities of the young. So, you know, last year on your show, you had me on and we discussed the Trivium. Well, the Trivium is a very important tool for people to be able to think clearly and critically and spot when somebody's trying to fool them. Well, you take a lot of kids through the compulsory education system where they're not taught any critical thinking and they're not provided logical fallacies or anything, and then you give them a drug and you tell them it's spiritual and you don't warn them of any of the negatives, that it's all just positive. And essentially you shroud it around New Age religious beliefs and this notion that's come up around quantum physics, that there is no truth in the world, the truth is arbitrary, and it's essentially just a full-on attack on the intellect of these kids. And so, you know, rather than focusing on things that they can verify and fact check, they'll say, well, there is no truth. I might as well not even bother. You know, let's just be positive. Let's positive think, this sort of thing. When that's, you know, the general goal is to get people just not to look and just, you know, to kill the messenger, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I would add, just to give a short answer to Vinny's question, that if you want to see how it can be used, just look at Woodstock. That's just couldn't be clearer. You have LSD being used and other hallucinogenics in a completely culturally debased environment. If you just look at what the mental activity of the participants was like, they were pretty much able to be led anywhere by anybody. They simply had lost, you know, moral and intellectual perspective. It isn't just the drugs, it's also the music. If you look at the paper we wrote, we show that all of the components that you could see, for example, in the Sunset Strip, which was one of the progenitor regions of the what is called the Archaic Revival, all of these elements, the music idol, electronic music, psychedelic drugs, just go on and on. All of these elements had been slowly placed into culture by a very few people. And, just to recap, a number of people had noticed this odd connection between the original music idols and military intelligence. Jim Morrison's father was the admiral in charge of the false flag episode at the Gulf of Tonkin that led to the Vietnam War. Frank Zappa's father was a very high-level chemical weapons engineer. Just goes on and on. Everyone involved that in this scene, and this is research that was done by a gentleman named Dave McGowan that I would hope people pay attention to, because he really shows very clearly that there was this connection. And so that there was then the suspicion that MKUltra, which was the CIA's mind control project, had been in back of this somehow. And it's because MKUltra had all of this LSD experimentation going on. And there was people who were making this connection between MKUltra and this the rock scene that was in the Sunset Strip and in, that was manifested Woodstock. So that was the question. And then one energetic research, Jan sitting with us, he actually found the primary documents. He actually found, these aren't circumstantial evidence. I mean, these are CIA internal documents that show that Wasson's entire trip to Mexico was a CIA MKUltra project. And so...
Subproject 58.
Subproject 58. And so at this point, the pattern that has been developed by a lot of other researchers who have been very worried about the connection between military intelligence, the CIA, and the counterculture that appeared in the 1960s, at this point, once Jan had made these discoveries, the evidence simply as a case you could take to a court of law became just overwhelming, in my opinion. And so the article that we wrote was, we aren't accusing anyone. What we're saying is the evidence is very strong, and we're asking that scholars and the public, because there has to be a lot of other people who have pieces of this puzzle, come forward and attempt to, fill out all of the patterns so that the public can be completely aware that this occurred. I don't think that we're interested in having a government investigation, because that would be absurd. If the government was in back of this project, then the government isn't what we think it is. It's not.
It's like appointing, and it's still going, for that matter.
Right. And so we just feel that there's enough evidence here. Now that there is active in the discovery of a primary document, an actual document saying that the trips that Wasson made to Mexico, which were the subject of the Life magazine article, if you trace this back, and again, this you can do through going to Gnostic Media and looking at Jan's work, that the Life magazine article that brought Wasson's experimentation with psilocybin to the public, that was the absolute progenitor. That was the absolute ground zero of the psychedelics getting into our culture. And
well,
now
let me just interject. Yeah. There's one more pivotal instance, which was one of Wasson's friends, Aldous Huxley, who worked with Wasson at the CIA Century Club, that we just found an audio recording of to prove that. And so Aldous Huxley writes his book, The Doors of Perception, and he's also writing about this idea of Soma in his book, Brave New World, to dumb down the masses. So enter Wasson, and then, you know, he and Wasson together, working together at the Century Club, are apparently orchestrating this entire thing together with Alan Dulles, John Foster Dulles, Dwight D. Eisenhower, all of these other characters are there at the Century Club as well.
Now, can I ask, what is the stated intention? You talked about the primary documentation behind Wasson's sub-project 58. Was there an outline or an intention behind the project? What exactly were they wishing to accomplish by sending him down to Mexico to trip out?
I believe that it was simply to create a plausible narrative to put into the Life magazine story. I mean, I think at that point they had already had LSD. They didn't need to research psilocybin to any extent. They, if you look at the Life magazine cover, that Gordon Wasson's story is described in, you'll see that on the cover, underneath the description of Wasson's incredible visions on magic mushrooms, they have an article they call Teenage Allowances. And I think this is wit. I think this is humor. I think that they had exactly in mind what occurred. In other words, they were going to create music idols. They were going to create overpowering electronic music. They were going to give LSD to as many people as possible. And they had evidence, because they had done all of this research on the effects of LSD, they thought at that point that individuals would be essentially very easy to take off a cultural cliff, that from you know, rock and roll music and LSD and free sex, that at that point the philosophies that they were hoping that the teenagers would pick up would be simply irresistible, because they would be given to them by their rock idols, who would be telling them to tune on, turn in, and drop out.
Rock idol, I should say, is pretty ironic in itself, because when you think of, they're trying to return this return of pagan or dark age beliefs, and then you think of rock idols, right? Then suddenly the rock idol of the music industry has a whole other layer or connotation. Right. To it.
The rock idol and, of the primitive religion. You know?
Sure. And, yeah. And I just want to say here before I forget, is that what the CIA had also done to lead researchers astray was they had actually slipped another narrative into the story of another CIA agent. And all of these guys were CIA, Alan Richardson, Gordon Wasson, a couple of these other guys. But they slipped the storyline of James Moore, the CIA agent who, unannounced to Wasson, was secretly, CIA and got Wasson the money, when in fact we have the letters from Wasson writing to this fund to get the money. We have letters between Alan Dulles and Gordon Wasson. Alan Dulles was the head of the CIA. And we have all of these primary documents. So, we know, just like when I wrote in my article last year, Gordon Wasson, the man, the legend, the myth, This James Moore guy, yes, he was CIA, but they were all CIA. He's just a scapegoat. What they did was they decided to vet him to protect the larger operation. So they exposed him to lead everybody just off on a wild goose chase.
Yeah, they didn't want the suspicion to come about that there was a clear agenda being hidden, and because they thought they could protect Wasson's identity as a MK Ultra Subproject 58 member operative, they hoped that it would just stop there with their disclosures about Moore, who was the botanist that Wasson brought along on the trip. But the fact is, they didn't need the chemist, and the agenda is very clear.
Okay, Joseph Antwell and Jan Irvin are my guests. We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know.
We don't know. All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen.
So we're back with Vinny's show here, and Vinny has lost the connection, and the station is saying for us to continue. And since I host my own show at Gnostic Media, I thought I would pick up the slack here while they get Vinny back. And so in the meantime, Joe and I were discussing our recent article, Manufacturing the Deadhead, a Product of Social Engineering. And we had just finished discussing the CIA cover story about James Moore, and we had gone on break. And so, Joe, do you want to pick up the next segment there?
Yeah. The basic question is motivation. What did they have in mind? And I think it is the dropout concept that Tim Leary put forward that was really, what they were hoping to achieve.
I just had a tune in, turn on, and Skype dropout.
Yeah, we had you covered, no problem there. Joe's actually just going on, so you might as well just let him continue. And then jump right in.
Well, before he does, I was just going to say, it's almost pointless me being here, because we're just going to be listening to you fellas the whole time with your research.
Oh, well, that's okay. You can interject with your questions about the article and whatnot.
No, actually, it's quite interesting, Vinny, because as the information comes out, I do appreciate getting people's responses. And, you know, this is very interesting information. It gives a different understanding of our culture than people have had previous. And so it's something that everyone should be able to manifest a strong reaction to. And I look forward to hearing yours on it. I was just going to finish up saying that if you look at the kind of communes that, you know, were in favor during the late 1960s, Tim Leary in the houseboat exchange he did with Allen Ginsberg and Gary Snyder and a few other of the gurus, they talk about hundreds of groups from cities leaving and setting up these kind of organizations. And they were really just mentally debased setups where there was lots of drug use, very primitive kind of planting. I was on some of them. I actually visited friends on these things. And I can just tell you that it was really, you know, a kind of a mental and cultural and moral cul-de-sac. And a lot of people, because I am of that era, I was there in the 60s and I was a victim of this, in fact. And, you know, I think a lot of people never really got out of it. And I think that what I'm concerned with, of course, is that this was simply a wave or even a large-scale experimentation for something even bigger and more controlling. And I think that one reason why people really want to follow up on this article with more research, and we're appealing to scholars and the public to help us, is that the current financial crisis has the earmarks, in my mind, of another project by the oligarchs. And so we could well be on the cusp of a kind of a general financial disaster that will just take essentially the whole culture into this neo-feudalistic condition.
Facilitate the dark age.
Yeah, the new dark age that they had done experiments with in the late 60s. I mean, if you look at what happened, you can trace a lot of the experimentations that MKUltra was doing from individuals to groups, and there's documentation showing they even went to towns, to larger groups. So then you have all these individuals that were in that MKUltra. Ken Kesey, Robert Hunter, who's in The Grateful Dead. There was another member of The Grateful Dead that was involved. But so you now are simply telescoping up in terms of this experimentation, and you're now doing experimentation in a very large scale. What is the end result of all this, I'm afraid, is really neo-feudalism. That's really, I think, maybe what they had in mind, but hopefully we can prevent this.
Well, you know, can I
interject something
Sure.
here? First of all, I'd like to cite an example of what you're talking about the communes there. In New Zealand, there's a poet named James K. Baxter, and he had like a big house, and there were copious quantities of hippies and all of these kind of people tripping out in the house. The cops would frequent it pretty much every day, and I met one of these people who was actually in that house with James K. Baxter back in the day. And she was telling me things like, "Oh, everything's coming down. There's no point in trying to resist it. I have encouraged my children to never have children because people are a toxin, cancer on the planet,
exactly.
So on and so forth." This is the damage that we talk about, because you referred to yourself, Joe, as a victim of this particular sect of people. How could you call yourself a victim if you have not been somehow damaged by it? And I was wondering what your perception is.
It's because my life was taken in a direction that was not to my benefit. I was, like many people my age, I took these drugs. I was exposed to these philosophies. And it took me a decade or so to essentially reverse this and try to get back into what I think are the real world. This was really just an epidemic condition. All of us, all of my generation, had some kind of negative effects in hindsight, having been exposed to all these things. And so I would, you know, just give another example. there's a book called A Course in Miracles, which was the progenitor of the New Age religions. And it was the first book that described channeling. There were these two individuals that were able to communicate with Jesus Christ. One of them, essentially, a scientist, a psychologist, was communicating with Christ. And then they produced a book called
Helen Schuckman,
which then, you know, produced what became the New Age religion phenomena, which is still with us very much. Well, those two scientists who produced A Course in Miracle have now been exposed as having been MKUltra employees. And I don't mean a rumor or a suggestion or something. I'm talking about absolutely exposed. Even now, on their own websites, they are trying to do damage control, giving explanations that are completely implausible, as implausible as the absurd philosophy that they were spinning out to people. So what you see is MKUltra is very broad, and it was really looking for ways to control. It was looking for those kinds of phenomena that on a large cultural scale would enable people to be easy to control. So this was what we were a victim of. And there are different kinds of victims. I had, you know, my problems, which were not certainly unusual or particularly severe. In fact, I hate to say it, but I kind of enjoyed the era. I had a good time in it, lots of it. But if you look at the article, one of the individuals who had been done experiments, brain experiments in the MKUltra projects, posts, gave us a letter testifying to what had happened to him with a tremendous amount of documentation. So that's another level of what a victim to this this project was like.
Let me add something, Joe. You know, and you had mentioned this guy or this person that you met that was
James K. Baxter,
and you know, talking about all of the pollution and not having children or anything like that, and telling their kids not to. This is actually the plan. The plan of the Dark Ages is, you know, partially eugenics and humanism, and getting people to not reproduce, and especially, you know, the middle class kids who are the most likely to do well. It's about dumbing them down. It's about making them feel guilty for all of the problems that the corporations and the oligarchs have created, and telling them, not to reproduce, but breaking down the family unit itself through Planned Parenthood, through feminism. There's a Canadian woman. You should interview her if you haven't before. Her name is Karen. She has a YouTube channel, Girl Writes What, and she's spent years investigating and exposing the feminism, going through all of the history of it and revealing that it's a complete fraud. So, you know, they use these attacks to destroy and break down the family unit, get kids to have wild sex, single moms and things like that are reliant upon the state, therefore, instead of a family unit. And so these are all different attacks. And when you get into the research, like on my last paper that I released in August, I talked about George Hunt's work, who exposed the UNSAID conferences back in the 90s. And George Hunt, I had him on my show, and he's got a documentary out that he actually released 20 years ago that didn't get traction until the last couple of years, exposing this. But In his video, he exposes the Fourth World Wilderness concept. And the Fourth World is essentially the battle for the mind. We have the First World, which is the U.S. and Canada and Europe. We have the Second World, which is Asia and Russia, essentially. And then the Third World, which is Africa, South America. And then the Fourth World, which is the battle for the mind. And so, you know, this is all of these things that come together in the Fourth World, under the Fourth World concept. And you can hear Edmund de Rothschild discuss this himself in George Hunt's video, because George Hunt was at the conference with Rothschild. But you can hear these guys all discuss their plans for selling all of this New Age spirituality and everything to get people to essentially accept this New World Order agenda. So the New Dark Age, the New World Agenda, you know, Terrence McKenna admits in one of his books. I don't remember if it was it's Archaic Revival, but he says in there that his definition of the Archaic Revival is just a renaming of the New Age to put it in historical context. And in other words, historical context is a neo-Dark Age as to the old Dark Age, right? They're, you know, the Archaic Revival. Get us to return to the status of peasants, go back to the teepees and the communes, where the elites and oligarchs can control all of us, and we go willingly. Like Aldous Huxley said in one of his articles, he says, "I believe that the world's rulers will discover that infant conditioning and narco-hypnosis are more efficient as instruments of government than clubs and prisons." And then he goes on suggesting people into loving their servitude as by flogging and kicking them into obedience. You know, so this is exactly the agenda. And it turns out that, you know, as I mentioned earlier, Aldous Huxley was a member of the Century Club with Alan Dulles and Gordon Wasson and these guys. But he is expounding this agenda that they want to get everybody through drugs. Essentially, what they do is they sell the drugs as a spiritual agenda, and you experience them and you have an amazing experience, but you don't see the dark side that they can be used for, and this is where they catch people with it. You know, you might see this as spiritual, but they see you as in a dream state, in a hypnotic sleep where they can control you.
Yeah, Vinny, let me just give you a real-time example of this, because I actually saw this. So you have a guy named Edward Bernays, who is Sigmund Freud's nephew. He's a double nephew. His mother is Freud's sister, and his father is the brother of Freud's wife. I mean, he's a double nephew, very, very inbred family. So Freud is discovering in the beginning of the 20th century that repressed sexuality is essentially the mortar of civilization. You need to have some repression of sexual impulse in order to, or what he calls sublimation, in order to delay gratification and produce civilization and have technologic power. And so his nephew Bernays starts essentially unraveling all of this. He uses the insights that Freud has developed exactly the opposite as you would imagine him to do. And he does it, in my opinion, simply because they know how to unravel civilization. So what one of the first thing he does is he creates these music idols. But he also brings highly sexualized dancing to America. He actually promoted Nijinsky, who was a ballet guy who exposed himself on stage as part of his act. And this is very early in the 20th century. So you can imagine all of the outrage this guy was
caused. It caused riots.
But Bernays kept saying, no, this is art. Expansion thing. Anyway. So now let's go forward 50 years. You have another guy exposing himself on stage. You have Jim Morrison of The Doors, right? You know, he's famous for exposing himself in these highly sexual lyrics. But he also...
Joe, we got a break.
Yeah, we do.
Okay, well, okay.
Here's a good cliffhanger. Here's a good cliffhanger, ladies and gentlemen. When we come back, we'll talk more about Jim Morrison exposing himself and the Doors of Perception at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand. And I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Welcome back.
I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. The show that goes everywhere, man, because, hey, there's a whole lot of world of information that most people would just never encounter in their life. And I think one of my quests in life is to learn as much as I can about all sorts of different things. You know, so I know a lot of stuff, but just a little bit about it. I'm probably not going to be overly specialized in a terribly large amount of things. Now, back into our subject, we were talking about Jim Morrison's Wang. Joe, would you continue?
Right. I'll just finish this up briefly because I don't want to make, you know, this too long a deal. But so when Morrison sings The End, he has essentially an exposition of what's called the Oedipal Complex, which was a discovery of Sigmund Freud, that where, according to Freud, the young men wish to kill their fathers so that they can have sex with their mothers. Now, the repression of this impulse was part of the mortar that produced civilization, according to the Freudian theory. Bernays, his nephew, brings Nijinsky to the U.S. Nijinsky starts the essentially debasing of music and entertainment performances by exposing himself. So then roll forward 50 years and you have Jim Morrison exposing himself, and then you have him also singing essentially about the Oedipal Complex. He describes a young man who, you know, kills his father, and then even though he doesn't describe it, he lets everyone know that he's going to have intercourse with his mother after having executed his father. Now, if you look at all of this, you'll see that this is the reflection of a very, very small group of people, that the Oedipal Complex is coming direct from the lineage of Freud and Bernays. Morrison's behavior on stage is very reflective of Bernays. And the drugs that everyone is taking while they're watching this are coming from Gordon Wasson's lineage, that who was an extremely close friend and associate of Edward Bernays. And so the actual long-term goal of all of this, in my mind, is simply the single mother, because that would be the condition under which the oligarchs knew that they would have the most debased power level of the children that were being produced, that single moms simply would have just such a hard economic time.
They're totally reliant upon the state at that
right,
point, which is totally the situation in England.
And so now here we are, 40 years after the Sunset Strip. Single moms are epidemic. The family structure has been pretty well shattered. And suddenly this worldwide economic crisis looms. And we culturally are going to have a hard time resisting it, because we don't have the community and specifically the family structure in place that you would need to be independent of the state. So that's the pattern I see.
Well, I do see that pattern as well. A persistent de-fathering complex, traditional benefits from the state being directed towards the mother, position of the children, and so on and so forth.
This is why, you know, Karen of Girl Writes What that I mentioned earlier, that's why her work is so important, because she exposes the entire foundation of this thing. And I mean, it's literally destroyed the backbone of England, where men no longer want to participate in marriage or in the workplace because they get nothing out of it. They're taxed for their money to go to the women, and they're not included in a part of the entire society, essentially. So men are dropping out of British society by, you know, the tens of thousands and refusing to participate. And so many women have this entitlement complex from the feminist movement, which Karen exposes, that, you know, you see all of this stuff, and then it's, you know, you start putting the pieces together, and it's, you know, as we say in the article, it's not one thing. You have to look at all of these different things to see the bigger picture. If you just look at feminism, or just look at the psychedelic movement, or just look at the destruction of the family unit, you don't see it. You have to step back and see all of these things together, and all of these things combined are the Fourth World Wilderness Agenda and the attack on the mind. And in fact, I'm just trying to pull it up here. It's going to take a second, but there was even a book written about this attack on the mind. Anyway, it's going to take me just a second here to pull it up, which I'm forgetting
now. Can I make a point while you're looking for that? It's about trauma-based mind control. Now, going through bad trips and things of that nature, that's trauma. And whatever trauma you suffer has a huge effect on the mind, doesn't it? And sure. So if you're encouraging people to take things that could be potentially traumatic and you're making sure that they're listening to music, which is potentially hypnotic, you've definitely got at least some effect to draw on there.
And the idea is, the idea also is, people listen to Terrence McKenna, et cetera, and then they have these notions of what the experience is going to be like when they go in. And it's sort of like a pre-programming before they even go into the experience. So then when they come out, they have all of these new age ideas rather than using something like the trivium, which is grammar, logic, and rhetoric, and who, what, where, when, why, and how to fact check everything. Then what they're left with is channeling from the Pleiades and Uranus and all of these different places where they're just going to get information from. And then anybody who has real information is dismissed, kill the messenger type thing. And truth becomes arbitrary and it's entirely dismissed. And then they'll argue that there is, in fact, no truth. You can't know anything. 1 + 1 isn't 2. When you walk out of the grocery store, your car is never going to be in the same parking spot twice.
If that happens, then you have a deconstruction of like what we talked about earlier, Joe. You said getting back into the real world where your actions have consequences. You can plan, you can make things happen, you can invent, you can create, so on and so forth. And I think what this does is it creates a despondency between the real world and the perception world. And it brings the perception forward into the front, and then basically everything else falls behind. And you have ineffective citizens who are easy to boss around, don't stand up for themselves.
Right. I mean, they're just working against us in every front imaginable. I mean, once you start looking at the different projects that MKUltra was organizing, you can see that religion, drugs, music, the idea of that relativity in terms of morals, all of these concepts, which essentially weakened what was a family-based middle class, they were producing all of them. And if anyone who goes to Jan's website, Gnostic Media, you can look at the work that Jan has done to show people how they can actually step through the process. And you can see the incredible connectiveness. In other words, you really want to see the relationship between something like Tavistock, the institute that the Freudian followers founded, and Esalen, where you have the New Age religions and drug being promoted. You can see this very small group of individuals' intellectual connections between them, and as they move forward, these ideas spread out. But they're always being created and controlled by these just very few groups of people, and it's sort of like you look at the acid tests that the Grateful Dead would put on, and then you look at the band members, and you see members of the military, MKUltra employees, and individuals who ended up as members of Bohemian Grove, right? Now, how is that possible? How is it possible that, all of these people, right, had such direct connections into these oligarchic clubs and the CIA's mind control project? I just don't believe that anyone who looks at this could ever think that could possibly be circumstance. Not when you look at all, then as you look at all of these things, all of these rock and roll groups, the philosophy that was being spun to teenagers at that time. It just, the individuals that were doing it have just too many direct connections into this shadow government and shadow psychology and MKUltra.
Just let me throw in that book that I was trying to find a minute ago. It's Battle for the Mind by William Sargent, and that's a very important book for people to read if they want to understand these attempts at controlling everyone and the all of the different multi-pronged approach. And just to go over some of the points here, since I've got this fourth world wilderness agenda up on my screen. We can get into like dumbing us down the hidden history of compulsory schooling, such as John Taylor Gatto's work. Joe mentioned Course in Miracles. We have critical thinking, such as the Trivium, removed from public schooling. We have this December 21st, 2012 stuff, destruction of the family and the middle class, destruction, or we have the environmental movement. And not that it's there, we don't need to care for the environment. It's using this, selling carbon and this sort of thing is, you know, negative when carbon is the foundation for all life. And the more carbon there is, the more plants grow, etc. But using it as a sort of tax system to limit people's reproduction. And then feminism, fluoride, the Gaia hypothesis, geoengineering or chemtrails, you know, GMO, neo-shamanism, all of that stuff, UFOs, vegetarianism, and especially people need to stop eating wheat, W-H-E-A-T.
Yeah, absolutely. There's been a lot of studies done on this, and it turns out that the food pyramid that is put out for everybody and the certain amount of cereals and wheats that you're supposed to be eating is precisely the same diet that's recommended when you're fattening up cattle for the slaughter. How interesting. We'll be right back after the break with more dietary requirements at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.